Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, January the 2nd, as we get things rolling here in Happy New Year 2022. We took a little time off, as I said before, but we're back on the saddle, looking ahead to a lot of action in 2022. This is going to be a very political year, to say the least, because of the midterms coming up in November. So it's going to be one of those years where politics is going to dominate the news. What else can I say? I do have a post over at the American Thinker this morning talking about the United Nations. And, you know, the United Nations is the same United Nations. You know, sometimes I look back at the history of the UN. It was founded after World War II. I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt to the people who started this thing. I think they wanted to have some kind of an organization that could serve as a talking ground, let's just say, for some of the problems between countries, so the countries would actually talk about their problems rather than fight about their problems. It didn't always work out that way, but sometimes it did, but most of the time it didn't. But here recently, the United Nations has become, frankly, just an absolute waste of time, a farce, to say the least. And perhaps the best example of that is the Human Rights Council. When you have countries like Cuba, like China, like Venezuela, like Russia, and some of these other countries where the rights of women are not respected, and these countries are members of the UN Human Rights Council, well, you have to wonder, you know, about, you know, exactly what is the validity of the UN. Now, the argument is that these countries are rotated so that, you know, everybody gets a shot at being on the UN Security Council. That's the argument. But in reality, that argument doesn't apply, because if you are a country like Cuba, for example, that does not respect anybody's human rights, what are you doing on a Human Rights Council? I don't care whether they rotate or don't rotate. You don't belong in a Human Rights Council. And, you know, the overall number of countries that participate in the UN, nobody seems to stand up and say any of this. Everybody just kind of sits back and let these countries rotate. And I just don't think that's a good idea. But that's what the United Nations is, an organization that, unfortunately, I think, has never really lived up to the standard. If you're going to have an organization of countries that do not respect human rights, then that's not really the kind of organization that I believe the United States should be in, nor the kind of organization that should be funded by American taxpayers. I'm not saying the UN doesn't do some good things. I'm sure they do. There's a lot of work that they do for children. There's a lot of work that they do, you know, in providing health care and stuff like that. So I'm not writing off the entire organization. But clearly, when it comes to things like human rights and when it comes to that, or democratic standards, the United Nations is failing miserably, and that's what my article is about. So I've always felt that the time has come for the United States to simply say, we are not going to participate in this anymore, given what this organization does, and we should just pull out. We should simply pull out and let the organization either die. It probably would die without the United States. Or if they want to go on and have somebody else fund it, that's okay with us. But we should not be funding organizations where countries like Cuba, like Russia, and like China, as well as a bunch of other countries where human rights, particularly women's rights, are not respected. We should not be a part of an organization like that. I'm sorry. We simply should not be. So let's get out of the United Nations. Let's get out of the United Nations. Why not? Let's get out of the United Nations. There's absolutely no reason to belong to the United Nations. Well, one of the big stories of 2021, in fact, it came almost at the end of 2021, was President Biden. He was talking to a bunch of governors, and as part of that back and forth, he said that there is no federal solution to the virus or to COVID or whatever they were talking about. Basically, what he was saying is, in so many words, that this problem of COVID has to be addressed at the state level. And it's really a state problem. every state is going to have to deal with it. Now, honestly, that's pretty much what President Trump was doing back in 2020. If you remember, he had passed a lot of authority to the governors, and some governors were doing better than others, and some states were doing better than others, but at least you had an accountable person in every state, and that person was the governor. But I think it was actually working out pretty well, because most of the governors obviously were concerned about their states, and they were concerned about improving the situation in their states. But during the campaign, the Biden campaign basically said, no, we're gonna do this. We're going to end the virus. I am going to end the virus. I am going to eliminate the virus. Now, that in itself was a foolish remark, because the President of the United States does not have the authority or the power to eliminate a virus. So that was a pretty silly remark in the first place. But it was meant to be a sign that the incoming Biden administration was going to take this problem and deal with it and was going to come up with a solution to the problem. Well, it didn't quite turn out that way, as we know now, and it's become a real mess. I think the administration has been very poorly prepared to run whole problem. Now, to be fair to the administration, a couple of surprises came along. The Delta surprise came along in 2021, and now we have a new thing, Omicron, whatever it's called, and that obviously has created a lot of problems. So it's not completely fair to criticize the administration for not being ready. But the bottom line is that this is an administration that thought that this whole thing would be a lot easier. And I think what they're demonstrating is the lack of executive leadership in this government. There's just a bunch of people in this administration who really have very little experience running things, starting with the president of the United States, who had been a senator for, let's say, 40 years. And during that time in the Senate, he was very effective at doing what senators do, which is to debate, negotiate, but senators don't really run anything. Now he's the president. Now he's got to govern. Now he's got to get things done, particularly in dealing with this. And you compare it to President Trump, who immediately took on the problem, immediately put everybody to work, immediately held everybody accountable, and you had a team that not only got the vaccines, but frankly, Operation Warp, which was a absolute success in retrospect. He got that whole thing going, and the country benefited a great deal from it. This administration does not have those skills. This administration just doesn't have the ability to move the ball the same way that President Trump and his team did a year and a half or so ago. So now the administration is in many ways at the mercy of the virus. They're at the mercy of saying a bunch of things during the campaign that were pretty foolish. And now their latest assessment is to say that there is no federal solution. Now, of course, if there is no federal solution, why are we doing mandates? I mean, why are we doing mandates if there is no federal solution? You know, why are we conducting all these mandates and writing all these mandates? By the way, the mandates are going down in the courts. Just about all of them are going down in the courts because the judges are looking at this and saying, well, where did you get the authority to do this, Mr. President? Where do you find the authority to do this? Well, he doesn't have it. They've been making this up as they go along. So now we find ourselves in a situation where there's great disenchantment with the way this administration is doing things, and it's not going to get any better. It's not going to get any better, not because the virus is going to get worse, but simply because this administration is totally, completely unprepared for a campaign like this. This is where President Trump's experience as an executive, as well as his energy as an executive, I think, was quite clear a year and a half ago or so. That is not the case with President Biden. He is simply not energetic, and he's not on top of the job. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. By the way, we got up this morning, and it was 19 degrees at 6 o'clock in the morning. We had quite a winter storm that, not a storm so much as, it was like 50 degrees on Friday, or I guess Saturday afternoon, and it was 19 degrees on Sunday morning. So we had this huge switch, this huge change in the temperatures, and things got very, very cold very, very fast. So this morning it was 19 degrees. It's a little warmer now. It's in the high 30s, and I think as the week goes on, it's going to get a little warmer. But that was quite a shock. 19 degrees at 6 o'clock in the morning. Man, that was quite a shock. Well, on this day in history, in 1966, we remember that the Green Bay Packers defeated the NFL Cleveland Browns for the NFL title. Now, this was an interesting NFL title game because it was the last complete NFL title game. Beginning in the following year, the NFL and the AFL got together and they played the first Super Bowl. So 1966, on this day, the Packers won the last NFL title before you had a Super Bowl, meaning that this was the last game of the season for the Green Bay Packers or for any NFL team. That was 56 years ago. Then the following season, as I said, they went to the Super Bowl, and then there was that extra game, the Super Bowl. Of course, the Super Bowl has become something completely and much bigger than anybody would have believed back in 1966 or 67 when the first game was played in the month of January between Green Bay and Kansas City. On this day in history, we also remember Senator Barry Goldwater, who was born on this day in 1909. You know, it's an interesting man. I read his biography years ago, a fascinating man who went into politics. He was what they like to call a principled conservative, a man who had certain ideas about what he believed. And he ran for president in 1964. He was the Republican nominee, and he went down. He lost like 40 states. But in the process, he won the election. He lost the election, but he ended up winning the battle of ideas because his conservative ideas created a movement of young conservatives that basically took over the Republican Party, and that's how you got Nixon. That's how you got Ford, Reagan, of course, Bush, and even President Trump. So he lost the election, but he won the battle of ideas, which is what it's all about. He wrote a great biography, by the way. I would recommend that you check it out. I read it one time. I was flying, I remember. It was about a 3 or 4 hour flight, and I picked up the biography, and I couldn't put it down. I couldn't put it down. That's how interesting it was. Just had a great life, very interesting life. A man who... You know, he was a plain-spoken conservative. He was not very diplomatic in many ways. And his campaign for president in 1964, not only he unleashed a bunch of ideas, but he was the one who actually introduced Ronald Reagan, because Ronald Reagan gave a speech on behalf of then-candidate Barry Goldwater. From that speech, then Reagan went on to become governor of California, and of course, as we know, President of the United States. But the very first political outing by Ronald Reagan was a political speech on behalf of Barry Goldwater at the end of the campaign in late October 1964. And that speech, you can check it out on YouTube or whatever, is just an absolutely great speech that came out of that campaign. And you need to check it out. It was just an absolute, it was Reagan at his best in many ways, speaking the ideas of Barry Goldwater. We also remember Roger Miller today. He was born on this day in 1936. He was a great country western singer. King of the Road was the name of the song that he became, or he made very popular back in the 60s. And I don't know if he was as popular in pop radio as he was in country radio. I think he was. But anyway, Roger Miller, in many ways, one of the first country singers who was able to move on outside of the country paradigm. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we will talk to you later.